Republicans, they fall down on sex. That's what they're obsessed by, because they're all at it the whole time. Democrats are corrupt as hell. I mean, they just take money because they're always protesting about the rich and they want to be rich themselves.
Coming up, bipartisan political commentary. Plus, there's Richard Branson considering what's great about America.
There must be something.
We bring you investigative reporting into the shopping splurge that's Thanksgiving.
Why do they call it Black Friday? Usually everything else you stick black in front of, like Black Monday and Black Tuesday.
Black pudding.
Black pudding.
And, oh yes, it's that time of year. Again.
I really have this urge to say to you, happy holidays.
You're listening to Chatter from America with Henry Timms from the 92nd Y.
In homage, Alistair Cook, we launched Chatter from America, which is a story of three British people in New York scurrying around the subways and trying to shed some light onto the world.
Matthew Bishop from The Economist.
Hello, we're going to start.
And me, Femi Okay, from WNYC Radio.
Hold on a minute, what is that noise I hear? Oh yeah, Alistair Cook turning in his grave.
Let's start with sex. Always good to start with a bang. Let's start with sex and politics.
The woman from Atlanta says that she's been having an affair with Herman Cain for 13 years.
I acknowledge that I knew the woman. I acknowledge that I've known her for about that period of time. But the accusation that I had a 13-year affair with her, no.
I can't tell if he's lying or not. Your men, what do you think?
I generally believe the woman in these cases, which is probably
a reflection of character. Just instinctively going to that area.
You know, I mean, yeah, probably wrongly, but I think that Herman Cain, particularly Republicans, I think this is their vice. I mean, the Republicans always, because they're always thumping the table and saying people shouldn't have sex and out of marriage and all this kind of thing, largely because they're trying to tell themselves that that's it. That's what they shouldn't be doing. And Cain, I mean, he's had sexual harassment accusations, and he's now got this this affair that's being alleged. And, you know, he's saying, oh, no, I helped her out. I gave her money. We went to Vegas together. But there was no sexual activity involved. And that's very nice. Friendship's a very fine thing.
So your sweeping generalisation is, on the whole, believe the women. And if you're going to go one way or the other, it's more likely with Republicans and Democrats.
I mean, Republicans, they fall down on sex, both heterosexual sex and homosexual sex. That's what they're obsessed by, because they're all at it the whole time. And Democrats are corrupt as hell. I mean, they just take money because they're always protesting about the rich and they want to be rich themselves.
What has to happen for Herman Cain to actually call it a day? It does seem to me that for the last 3 weeks, everyone's been having the same conversation, which is Herman Cain is at any minute going to quit. And it seems to me that this man is going to let nothing stick. He will keep going.
I told you this bullseye on my back has gotten bigger.
I can see that he would stay in the race as long as he possibly can, as will all the others, Michelle Bachmann and who else has been in the lead? I forget his name. Perry. Rick Perry.
How quickly, what a fall from grace. And of course, Ron Paul is going to stay in the race until 2025. Mm.
I disagree. Shall I tell you why?
Yeah.
Because all of this story, the affair, the 13-year affair, the woman from Atlanta, Georgia, this has all been happening and Herman Cain hasn't gone home yet. He's been on the road campaigning all week. Mrs. Cain is waiting for him at home this weekend. Herman Cain says he will decide at the weekend what he's going to do.
So this is why he'll keep campaigning.
Those two things are connected.
He doesn't want to go
home. All the investigative journalists should be out at the local pizza restaurant seeing whether he's eating his pizza alone this weekend rather than at home with Mrs. Cain having a fine home-cooked meal.
Or maybe he fears going home to Mrs. Cain even more than he fears the national humiliation of staying on the trail.
If this happened in the UK, would he have been out of the race by now? Do we have different mores?
Sex brings down the Conservative candidates in Britain, just as it does in America. In fact, we've now got to the situation where in France, you know, thanks to the DSK, Dominic Strauss-Kahn scandal of earlier this year, where even the French now, you know, it's actually a handicap in France to have had an affair or an alleged affair or to have been a sexual harasser, which used to be obligatory for election in France.
So there's nowhere to go to have a mistress now, is there? Where else would you go?
But then that's not
it. Well, there's North Korea. I think, you know, you can ship them in by the boatload there.
It's a fairly extreme solution.
Yeah, democracy is absent, which is a problem. But
the thing with Gingrich, though, of course, is that if we are going to go down the moral investigation road, Gingrich is someone whose past is messy, to say the least. And yet it is absolutely credible that someone with that messier past is going to go and be a credible candidate for the White House. So it does seem to me that we've moved beyond the stage. We're certainly not shocked by this anymore. There's an argument, I think, that we're moving towards tolerance, that actually this is so old hat now that it is no surprise that any senior figure has had a series of dalliances. It comes with the territory. A lot of people aren't being switched off by it.
So as of today, with a lot of prayer and soul searching, I am suspending my presidential campaign.
You're so keen. You probably think that we would elect you. You're so keen.
You're so keen.
I bet you think that we would elect you. Don't you? Don't you?
Let me bring into the conversation Gideon Litchfield. He's the media editor at The Economist.
Hello, hello, hello.
What have you been working on recently? What's been on your mind?
I've been trying to figure out how the media operation behind Occupy Wall Street has been happening, and there's been quite a bit of coverage of it recently in The New Yorker and The New York Review, and I've been talking a little bit to people myself. I think what's been coming out, in to summarize it, is basically that, like many anarchies, it's not as freeform as it looks. Quite a lot of the original planning of Occupy Wall Street came out of a magazine called Adbusters. Someone described what is happening in Occupy Wall Street as an API, which means an application programming interface, and it's basically, if you run a online service, you can make the data that your service produces available to other people to do things with it. So if you're an airline, you can put all your flight information into an API, and then other people can build apps. And so the argument has been that actually Occupy Wall Street, the movement itself, is like an API. It's just churning out all this information and slogans, and lots of other people, media activists, media companies, digital anarchists and of all stripes, are taking what's coming out of Occupy Wall Street as this kind of this raw stream of information and repackaging it as left-wing messages of various kinds and various agendas.
So it's almost like this is a viral marketing campaign by Apple. You know, freeform anarchy. There's an app for that,
isn't it? Just
you see, it wouldn't be Apple, because Apple is a closed system. So this is more like it's by Android or it's by Line, you know, it's Google or something.
You see, The Economist, we really have the fine detail.
And Gideon, before you go, what piece of music sums up your working week this week?
I think probably Twist and Shout,
because
that's actually more of a reference to the what's going on in politics. Everybody trying to wriggle out of what they've been saying, and then say something else even louder.
Gideon Litchfield, media editor at The Economist. Thanks for dropping in.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about something upbeat, because I think given the level of things to worry about in the world right now and the troubles in the economy, it's nice to have some happy news stories here on Chatter from America. So I thought it was very good news that we had such a good shopping weekend here in the States. On Black Friday was up 7% and Cyber Monday was up 33%.
Why do they call it Black Friday?
Because the stores go into the black. It's the one point, the last point before Christmas, where you actually get the chance to actually go into the black and make money before the end of the year.
Because usually everything else you stick black in front of, like Black Monday or Black Tuesday.
Black pudding.
Black pudding. It's
yeah.
Black pudding. Certainly Black Monday. It's usually about the share prices falling down rather than things.
That's a good point.
But isn't it just a dismal feeling of having to go shopping on that day that you think, it's Black Friday, I can't possibly go to the mall today because it's
But in
just...
fact, they all go there on Thursday now because they're so excited to get started on the shopping. That's the addiction. This year was the story of all these stores opening up at midday on Thanksgiving when they're supposed to be tucking into turkey.
Well, this is the danger, that Thanksgiving just becomes a nice excuse to open the stores a day early. So we have Black Friday and then we have Cyber Monday and then we have Huge Regrets Tuesday, and then we have Send Everything.
It's Cyber Monday when the Cybermen can go shopping.
Cybermen can go shopping. And then by Wednesday, it's Send Everything Back Wednesday, and then that's a week all done. Although I did have a question for you, Matthew, as the economics wizard that you are. Interestingly, on Cyber Monday, 50% of the purchases were actually done from the workplace. We're basically not doing any work on Monday because we're buying things, buying waffle irons. And then the second thing is a lot of it where there's credit card debt. So net-net, how do you feel about Cyber Monday?
Well, I think the economy needed a boost. And for the last 3 years, ever since the economy collapsed, people have been feeling that they had to stop borrowing money on credit cards. They had to build up their savings again. They couldn't go shopping. And if they did go shopping, they had to go to dreadful hellholes like Dollar General.
I don't think you've ever been to Dollar General.
It's terrible. Of course I haven't.
What's in Dollar General?
They sound like absolutely terrible places. And they couldn't resist, like any addict coming off some, you know, drug or whatever. They finally, the cold turkey was too much, literally Thanksgiving. And I guess they decided they would go to the store and have a little spend. And the real question is this sort of going back on crack again, or is it, are they going to have done this, got it out of their system, and now back to being prudent, back to building up their savings?
But just by shopping, doesn't that help the economy a little bit if people actually spend money?
Yeah, that's what caused the economic crisis that we're at the moment. So lots of people borrowed lots of money, went shopping, paid far too much for everything, and then realised they couldn't pay for it, and then the economy collapsed. So we're trying to wean them off that. I know. Interesting research shows that about 80% of shopping decisions are now made in the household by women. Mm. And that really it's down to women to decide whether this frugality is going to continue. And I was talking to an expert who has written books about women's shopping choices, and he was saying a lot of women have just had this wardrobe moment in the last 2 or 3 months where they've looked at their wardrobe and said, I've been wearing the same basic clothes for the last 2 or 3 years because I've been so disciplined and I can't take it anymore, and I just got to go out to the store and buy myself a whole set of really new outfits and look fantastic for this party season. And he says this is a treat yourself boom that's only going to last for maybe a little while, because he thinks that women understand better than men the need to build the household budget up again and be more sensible. I don't know how that's affected your shopping, whether you relate to that, or have you been out splashing the cash?
I actually hate shopping. I loathe shopping. I can go years without buying anything.
Well, what about cyber, though? Cyber money. Surely you spend some time during your work day.
No, I actually called my sister and told her what I wanted for Christmas and told her Monday was a good day to buy it. And she bought it. It's actually sitting at my desk right now.
What is it?
It's I can't tell you because it's my Christmas present, but I'm, you know, so, it's my surprise. I want to pretend I'm surprised when I open it on December 25th.
If Femi tells us, Matthew, then she would have admitted it out loud, which means it exists and therefore she can't pretend to be surprised.
It's electric, though.
So, the benefits of cyber shopping. I have been thinking, though, about the...
Yes, I love it when you think.
No, this happens...
It's my favourite bit of the show.
Happens periodically. And I did think to myself that there is an opportunity, which I think Chatter from America should pioneer for next year,
which is...
Matthew's just right that shopping is a great American skill, as is giving. So my view is that there is a viral opportunity in us to start that movement where Tuesday becomes Giving Tuesday. So we've got through Black Friday, Cyber Monday and Giving Tuesday. So from next year, we will start this movement today. We'll encourage people everywhere to give a little bit more to someone in need on every Tuesday after Thanksgiving. So hashtag Giving Tuesday, the movement has begun. Brainy politicians have had a bit of a bad week because the Newt Gingrich, who I keep returning to Newt Gingrich.
I think got a man crush on Newt.
He did a very good speech, I thought, down in Florida where he was talking... He was talking all about the...
Ignoring that, moving on.
I'm not ignoring it, Femi, as much as rising above it. But he did a very good speech in Florida where he was down there and he was criticising the president. And it's actually a very interesting thing about the value of intelligence or lack thereof, that his big criticism, and this was presented as if this was a bad thing, was the president had been to Columbia and had been to Harvard. And Newt Gingrich said, I'm going to challenge him to a debate.
First of all, I've said, and he can bring a teleprompter. So we're going to make it fair. Well, no, but in a Lincoln-Douglas-style debate, he would have a set-piece opening that could all be on a teleprompter. How can you be a Columbia, Harvard Law, editor of the Law Review, best orator in the Democratic Party, and be afraid of some guy who taught at West Georgia College?
Obama is described as professorial, which people mean...
And it's not complimentary.
No, they mean that he is sitting there thinking and kind of coming up with these sort of long-winded sentences rather than leading. And what we need is leadership at the moment.
There's a movie with Gwyneth Paltrow called Country Strong, which neither of you will have seen. But it's a movie which all talks about this idea that there is a type of country strong. There is also now a sort of country intelligence. There is an idea that actually there is a real intelligence, which is sort of Newt Gingrich intelligence, which is you can be very smart, but it has to be practical smart, not professorial smart.
Did you make that up from seeing that movie?
Well, no, I just remember thinking about the movie and thinking what an interesting phrase country strong is. There's this idea that there's obviously urban strong or you know, coastal strong, and then there's real country strong. And Newt Gingrich is presenting himself as sort of country smart versus the president who seems to be losing ground for being clever, which is a very odd thing. I'm country strong.
This is Richard Branson, and you're listening to Chatter from America.
And finally, the book of the week.
Richard Branson's book.
Do you like it?
Can you say? I do like it. So the book is called Screw Business as Usual. And his basic message is, wouldn't the world be a lot better if every business was like my business, which is run by some lovable adventurer who's going out trying to make the world a better place. And he actually makes quite a convincing case that it would be. I mean, I think probably very few of us are going to be as fortunate as he is and own a nice island in the Caribbean where you can bring non-profit leaders and Desmond Tutu together to sort of plot how to solve some of the world's big problems. But it's an inspiring book. What was striking, though, was that how early he has been in spotting some of the big trends that, you know, have become the norm. So Virgin was the first airline to ban smoking. You know, he also launched this whole aggressive marketing campaign for condoms called Mates in Britain.
I remember that.
When AIDS was really first taking off and the government was very reluctant to talk about safe sex and so forth, and he was out front on that one. And in America, Virgin Mobile, their telephone company, has identified very strongly with dealing with youth homelessness problems and made that its marketing campaign, one of its main marketing campaigns in America, encouraging its customers to actually take part in helping the homeless. So there's some really impressive stuff in there. And so I do recommend the book. I mean, it is full of Branson. So if you really find the man irritating...
Well, what were you expecting? It was going to be... It's Richard Branson's biography, which is actually about football.
Is he always on?
On what?
Switched on.
The cell.
He's always being Branson.
I find him quite unusual, the person to interview, because he's quite nervous and he stutters a bit and he doesn't get to the point very quickly. So he's very different to the adventurer who you just think is sort of very decisive and clear. And I mean, he's impressive. I mean, he's funny, but he's not a great orator. So, Richard, could you tell us one thing that you feel very positively about when you think about America at the moment?
There must be something.
One thing.
His marketing is much more through actions, I think, than through words.
I tell you, he's very nice, actually, on thinking about people who are like they seem. Newt Gingrich, right? Newt Gingrich.
Oh, shut up.
No, I just want to say this because...
Oh, come on.
No, this is important.
You definitely have a man crush on him.
We
have to get him on the show.
I've realised this throughout the duration of this podcast.
He does have very nicely groomed hair.
It is the case.
He has a lot of hair.
We have a lot of events at the 92nd.
And he's very well built.
I hadn't noticed that. I've been
solid.
I've been won over by the strength of his arguments. We have a series of very of events at the 92nd Street Y, and the people come, and lots of prestigious people come by, and you can always tell what sort of people they really are. You know, are they really on by how they treat our security guys? Because our security guys put up a lot of nonsense, and obviously they have to look after people. And it is consistently the case that the further right wing people are, the nicer they are. And actually, Newt Gingrich and Karl Rove were as gentlemanly as it gets. Both of them actually phoned our director of security the next day, personally, just to say thank you for their help. So I just think, as we think about Newt Gingrich, as we've been thinking about throughout this show, it's worth remembering what a genuinely nice man he is.
Femi, I really have this urge to say to you, happy holidays. Why do you hate it so much?
Because I am a multiculturalist. I love everybody else's celebrations, Diwali, Hanukkah. I say happy Diwali, happy Hanukkah. I don't want the celebration that I actually celebrate merged into a big blob and called a holiday. I would love people to say happy Christmas to me.
Or Merry Christmas.
Henry?
Well, I feel mixed about this because I'm a big fan of Christmas. But I do think in New York, where the makeup... you know, the makeup of different people of different backgrounds is significant, that actually there's a level of respect to say it's not, we are not living in a purely Christian society. you know, this is a country which has those beliefs, and it's reasonable that we accept that everyone can have a holiday. One of the reasons Thanksgiving is so good, because it's secular, that actually everyone gets to celebrate Thanksgiving, not everyone gets to celebrate Christmas, not everyone gets to celebrate Hanukkah.
But you work in a Jewish organisation, or Jewish-run organisation. I mean, do they say Happy Hanukkah, or do they say Happy Holidays there?
It depends what day of the year it is. I think a hard and fast rule is a mistake, but I think a level of respect and tolerance, and Femi, you've made it clear what you would like from us, which is to wish you a Merry Christmas, which we very happily will do so. But Matthew, I know, will be more sort of ecumenical and will request...
Yeah, happy holidays.
Matthew, what have people been listening to?
Well, in the last hour, hopefully something else.
You've been listening to Chatter from America.
With Matthew Bishop.
Henry Timms.
And Femi O'Kelly.
Chatter from America is produced from the studios of WNYC Radio in New York. The opinions you've been listening to belong strictly to the chatterers and not to the organisations they work for. Thanks for listening.
And the fact that in the States, paternity leave is virtually non-existent.
I imagine it's probably illegal in some states.
Well, it's strongly discouraged. Excuse me, sir, stand over. Have you been on paternity leave?
What do you think you're doing anyway as a man?
What do you do on paternity leave?
Yeah,
you emote and you empathise and you agree.
I think somebody dropped you on your head this morning.